This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And welcome to a feminist movie a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yes. Or whenever it comes out, because we're recording it on Wednesday.
Yes.
So we shall see. We shall see. We are today talking about CODA, which is an acronym that stands for Children of Deaf Adults. And it was an Oscar-winning 2021 film written and directed by Cian Hayter. And I hope I'm getting that close to right. I looked it up, but I don't know. I tried. It is an English language remake of the 2014 French film La Famille Bélier. And it follows Ruby Rossi, who's played by Emilia Jones, a child of deaf adults. The deaf characters are played by deaf actors, which shouldn't seem such a big deal, but it unfortunately is.
It is.
Currently.
Yeah.
Though the financiers of this movie pushed back on that. And it was at the insistence of Marlee Matlin, who was the first deaf actor to win an Oscar and the first to sign on to this project. She plays the mom who threatened to drop out otherwise. So after that threat, they relented and were like, okay, we will cast deaf actors to play these deaf characters. About 40% of the film is communicated through American Sign Language, and Hayter learned for the production learned ASL, and they had two ASL masters, as they were called, on set. It's a critically acclaimed coming-of-age story, though not without some debate within the deaf community, and we're going to talk about that at the end. It won Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor for Troy Kotsur, who was the first deaf man to win an Oscar for acting, and Best Adapted Screenplay at the 94th Academy Awards. So spoilers, I guess. This is a recent film.
Yeah, this is fairly new. I think 2021.
So yeah, spoilers. But it was, I watched a couple days ago. It was really cute. Really liked
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a lot more than I thought. By the way, the female lead, the young woman, is actually in Lock and Key. And I was like, looking at her, I was like, I know her. You know how I do this thing where I have to go back and forth. Which, by the way, Kutzer was in Criminal Mind, and I remember him in that.
Oh. Look at that.
He did great in that. Okay. Yes, he was a serial killer, but whatever. He was really good in it in that one episode. I thought it was good too. Definitely felt a little off, so I could definitely tell there was a bit of controversy in where it was coming through an ableist person's lens. So someone who's not deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, this is definitely a perspective. It also reminded me of the Mr. Holland's Opus. Did you ever see that one?
No.
So Richard Dreyfuss has a deaf son, and he is a composer and a music teacher. And so he has to flip. It's like the flip script of like, oh, I have to show my son. I want him to appreciate music. Here's this.
Right, right. And that's one of the biggest points of contention about this is that music aspect, which we will talk about. We will talk about. But first, let's get into the plot. The film takes place in Gloucester, Massachusetts, and follows 17-year-old Ruby, who is the only member of her family, parents Frank and Jackie, and older brother Leo, with hearing. She is the titular Coda. She helps work at her parents' struggling fishing business, a business she plans to work at full-time once she graduates. And there's this local board meeting that Frank and Leo go to, and people are really angry at it over these sanctions and these fees that are making it harder for businesses to stay afloat, pun, causing boats to disappear from the harbor. Frank announces he's going to start his own company to bypass restrictions and sell his own fish, and he calls on others to join him. The family depends on Ruby to spread the word so they can make the new business successful. After seeing her crush, Miles, sign up for choir, meanwhile, Ruby does, she signs up too, hoping to get closer to him. The choir teacher, Mr. V, pairs her with Miles for a duet and encourages her to do more singing, even trying to convince her to audition for the school he went to, Berklee College of Music, and he offers her the same private lessons he was already providing Miles. She agrees, but all of this stuff stretches her thin as her family frequently needs her to be their interpreter. And this culminates in Mr. V becoming frustrated with her, alleging she doesn't really care about the music because she's often late or like falls asleep in the lessons.
Right. Yeah, because she has to wake up at 3 a.m. to go fishing and then goes to school and then goes to these lessons. That's impossible for anyone.
Anyway, it's a lot.
Yeah. So one day, Ruby goes swimming with Miles because, you know, Miles does something bad and he's a jerk and he has to apologize. And this is a way of him apologizing. Sure.
I guess.
Yeah, sure. After she and the family get into a whole fight, by the way, she decides to go swimming with Miles while Frank and Leo go out fishing, accompanied by a federal fishing observer who did not realize they were deaf. And when they do not respond to, actually, she apparently tattles on them essentially and calls in the Coast Guard to say that they don't have people. And when they don't respond to the radio calls and horns of the Coast Guard, who abruptly jump on like they're going to take people down.
Yeah,
it was really dramatic. They receive a fine and have their fishing license revoked for a while. They get like a $2,500 fine. It's excessive.
Yeah.
This is on top of the fact that they had to pay for this federal person to be on board to make sure they're filing like following regulations. It was a lot of money. You could see why people were angry.
Yeah.
Later, they have an argument with Ruby, telling her that she should have been on the boat with them. While she argued, she can't always be there to interpret, and this is not her fault. After Frank and Leo appeal, they get their license back on the condition that they have a hearing person on board with them at all time. And Ruby tells him she'll join the business full time after graduation instead of pursuing college because they would have to, you know, they're like, oh, no, what do we do? This leads to another argument. While her parents are happy to know this, Leo gets angry and tells her that she is talented and she'll regret the decision not to go to college and that he is being treated like a baby.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotions. The family goes to the choir's recital Ruby is performing in, and though they can't hear her, they see how receptive and positive the crowd is to Ruby's singing. And later that night, Frank requests that Ruby sings while he fills her vocal cords, and he is overcome with emotion, leading to a shift in their relationship. Yeah, the mother the whole time is the one that's like, she can't go, she can't go. She did not seem moved by the concert. She's just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah, she was like,
she's doing
cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because she, at the beginning, she was like, what if she's bad? What if she's really bad? I was like, wow.
Yes.
I don't know if they're trying to make her look bad. Like, this editing or this script is making the mom look really cold. Not cool.
She has that line, too, in the beginning where she's like, so if I was blind, you'd want to be a painter?
Right. Like, I was like, whoa, this seems like, this is really heated for, and she's all jokey about it. There's no real, like, It's almost worse because it's like coldly done with no care. But I was like, well, okay, that's how we're going to interpret this character. How dare you do that to Marley? Anyway, so the whole family drives with Ruby to her audition to Berkeley, getting her there a little late. Once they get there, Ruby bumps into Miles, who wishes her luck and tells her he didn't make it, that he choked at the auditions. There's a rule on no guests at the auditions, but Ruby's family finds a vantage point to watch. And so they're at the upstairs balcony. And when she had forgotten her music, Mr. V comes in, who had supposedly left, but came back and accompanies her because the other person who was on the piano did not know how to play Joni Mitchell's song.
Yes. Yes. And Ruby, because of all of these things, is very nervous. And Mr. V makes a deliberate misstep, miskey, so she can start again. And after she catches sight of her family, she becomes more confident and she sings and signs Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell. The judges notice the family and realize what is going on, but she gets in and invites Miles to visit her. Meanwhile, the Fishers in the community have been learning sign language so they can communicate. While her family drives away after she is dropped off at college, she signs that she loves them very much.
Yes. End of story.
Happy ending.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So, by the way, Miles is Scottish. This is something I always have to know. And the girl who plays Ruby is English.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm always like, ha, look at them in their accents. They did a great job.
But let me mock them a little bit.
But let me note that they, I don't know why, but that's always fascinates me when I'm like, oh, look at that. Okay, I would have never known. Good on you.
Yeah, I was watching another... I've been back in my mountaineering. I don't know what is going on with me. But I was watching Everest, and it has Martin Henderson, who is in X with a very Southern accent. But he's also, isn't he in True Blood? And he has a anyway, I had a moment because he has a New Zealand accent in Everest.
I'm trying to remember.
You know who it is. Well, if you saw him, you'd be like, oh.
I'm
going
to look it up.
This
now
is just the podcast where we go on tangents about actors.
And this other is what I do in real life, though.
Yes.
This is true. He was on True Blood? That's what
I don't know if he was. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about, but he definitely wasn't on True Blood. You're wrong.
All right. I accept that. I'm not like you, Samantha.
Anyway. This is Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, I wouldn't know about that.
I don't either.
Oh, well, we've gone off the rails.
We have. But coming back to yes. Everest and the accents.
Well, we don't need to come back to that at all. But yes.
Well, I think it's different because of these actors, and especially being Ruby, she is using American Sign Language. And I've always thought that was interesting, too, because she's having to flip. Not that she knew sign language to begin with, but, you know, it's different from different countries. So I wondered what the differences would be in her, like, adapting to that, too.
Yeah. And most of the cast and crew did learn ASL. So I think it said it took her 9 months to learn to be able to do it like very confidently, because it's a big part of her role. She does communicate through that throughout the film. But yeah, that was an interesting aspect of it. It's a very coming of age story. It's a very feel good story. And that was one of the critiques of it, was the ending was so nice, which is funny to me. I get it. But it was like, oh, everything works out.
But, you know, I think it's also, I was surprised. I was hesitant in watching this movie because I do feel like it's voyeurism to a certain extent that I don't, it makes me uncomfortable with anything like this. But it's also like there's the two sides to this coin is that it does make me uncomfortable. You should be uncomfortable. You should be wanting to watch this. But what type of voyeurism is this? Is this learning? Or are you just doing this in a almost fetishized way? Mm-hmm. Because also sign language is kind of like that, too. I wanted to learn sign language. I think I feel like every person wants to learn sign language growing up. But then it looks like, okay, what is the reason? Do you truly want to? And then people who teach it and get obsessed with it teach it incorrectly and then take away from those who actually, like the deaf teachers who are like, hey, don't do it that way. Please, you're messing us up type of thing. Like, that's a whole conversation on TikTok that's been happening back and forth for a while now. People with good intentions not doing it correctly and then really throwing off an entire community of people who are like, this is our language. Please stop this.
Right. And I think when it comes to this movie, that's one of the biggest critiques, or just conversation points, because people did have a lot of thoughts about it. But one of the things is, you know, they had these two ASL people on set at all times. One of the things people wrote about that really resonated with me was, again, those like small things that you don't know unless that's your experience. There are things in ASL. Which I did take in elementary school. I would never, ever presume to be any kind of expert. But like, unless you speak in that all the time, you're going to, as a hearing person, kind of try to put it in a way a hearing person would put it. And it's not always that same way.
Right.
So that was one of the things people brought up, is some of those differences they saw when watching this movie. And I would say the conversation in the deaf community that came out after this came out, like, no community is a monolith, but overall it felt like people were very torn in that, like, they liked a lot of it, but there were other parts that were like, this is actually damaging. It's complicated. And that was another thing a lot of people said, is that, you know, there's the deaf experience varies and it is often very complicated. So it was just a lot of talking around that. And the actors, they got all the praise, which is great. They were great. There was also a lot of conversation around the depiction of the parents as sexually active and self-sufficient, because that's something we've talked about a lot of times. People with disabilities are desexualized in media. So they were talking about that. I did see some conversation, though, about how it was sort of used humorously. Mm-hmm. Like, they were, like, very sexual, but it was very humorous. And I think, like, because, unfortunately, we don't have this representation a lot, then that feels almost like they aren't being very sexualized. Like, not sexualized, that's not the right word. But it's almost like it's being, like, used as a joke as opposed to, like, they're actually sexually active.
I mean, I can see that because any joke, I wonder too, those also like the parents, the right. embarrassment for a child in general, and that can yes. be used in any way
right.
for any spectrum of communities. But like, I also thought that was interesting with the brother. Like, they made sure, like, he was always on Tinder trying to find a mate, and then he did hook up with a friend, which was not wonderful. But, like, it took it into, like, no, this is, they're sexual people, they're handsome, they're attractive, like, all these things are attractive. Yeah. Nothing, like, takes away, their deafness does not take away from their dating life growth, I guess, dating growth, whatever, however mm-hmm. he has it. But, like, I think that they did that in a good light as well. But I can see, like, yeah, again, like, when I was talking about the reason I think people were so shocked about the good ending is most award-winning, especially when it comes to Oscars, it needs to be tragic or tragic porn yeah. for you to actually like it. So I appreciated that. Like, it's a difference
yeah.
instead of seeing something go destroyed because of a disability or, right. you know, when we see the feel-good movies where someone has a disability and they die and everybody cries, you're like, that's awful. Why are we praising this movie? They don't have to die. Not right. every disabled person has to die to make mm-hmm. this a good film. What the hell? And which is a yeah. huge critique in the entirety of the film industry. So mm-hmm. I'm like, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I'm like, well, the opposite way of not having a good ending is that better? Because we don't want that either, do we?
Right. Right. I think, again, it has to do, so much of this is very complicated because there isn't this representation. So I think a lot of it was like people, CODAs who are like, no, that wasn't my experience, but I'm happy to see this representation.
Right.
Like, but because there's just so little representation.
Yeah.
That it's. I guess it's still, there's like a lot of work to be done. It could be so right. much better.
I mean, like, it absolutely holds true, like, that you're getting the crumbs. It's like, you yeah. have to be appreciative because at least you have something.
Yes.
So why are you complaining? We finally gave it to you. I mean, that's that right. whole conversation. Like, when Parasite came through and everybody was pissed, this is, you know, like, that they won and people were like, why are you too lazy to read subtitles? Is that a hard thing for you? Are you really struggling? But, like, stuff like that. And we had to be, you know, I'm talking about, like, Asian people, like, had to be grateful. It was a good film, don't get me wrong. But the entirety right. of the film was like, oh, well, look how these poor people... And it also
yeah.
ended tragically.
Yeah. It's
Squid Games, same thing. Everything is awful.
Yeah. Well, that was definitely something I read a lot researching this, was people writing about, like, I didn't feel like I could critique it in any way because it's, you know, so rare. And that right. they were legitimately, like, did like it, or at least parts right. of it, and were happy
right.
To, like, they did still see it as a huge deal. Of like representation, that it wasn't a story about pity, but not being comfortable because it is unfortunately so rare, because opportunities are so slim,
right?
To make any kind of public critique about
right.
it.
It is. And again, like for us who are hearing people, we really don't have the right to say one way or the other. Like, we
yes.
can say we enjoyed the movie, we enjoyed mm-hmm. the acting, all that for sure, and that bias, but we can't really say one thing or the other because it's not our fight, it's not our conversation. This is not our platform to be able to be like, this is why you should be loved by all the deaf community, because that's absolutely not true.
No.
And we should listen to the critiques. I did find it interesting. I don't know about you. You watched it on Apple, right? Which is
yeah.
not a sponsor.
No,
right now,
not currently.
but the intent. So when you watched it, did it have the subtitles for the ASL?
Yes.
So when I was reading it, because what I was watching it on a different platform, not going to talk about that. it did not have subtitles, and I was like, oh no, what do I do? So I had to go back through, because again, 40% of the movie is in ASL. I was like, oh no, mm-hmm. they intended not to actually, like, they did that on purpose. Like, it's provided for. You can get it. But
right.
the idea was, like, that the hearing people would be left in the dark, often as
yeah.
People who are not hearing or who mm-hmm. are deaf, who have maybe issues and not being able to access the subtitles or the captions, closed captions. So I was like, oh, I guess I could try to watch it that way. I could not, by the way. I could not. I was like, I can't do this. It's so frustrating.
Ooh.
So it kind of teaches you a little
yeah.
lesson. But I did read that in the intent, they didn't necessarily do it on purpose, mm-hmm. but they left it out on
right.
purpose, kind of. You know what I'm saying? Like,
with, yeah, with like you could go get
you
it.
Go,
but
yeah, it's accessible,
right.
but we're not going to necessarily do it easily for you.
Yeah.
And
you
I was like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing like the streaming service, since it was produced by Apple, they would provide that on their own streaming service. But of course, for me, I am now at the age I love subtitles and now cannot watch movies without subtitles. So when we go to the theater and I'm like, oh my God, I'm suffering.
Right.
Because I can't see the subtitles. I love them. And I feel like I can't hear it correctly if I'm not looking at the subtitles. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people understand this.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so that's automatic. So you might not have known. But according to one of the things that I read, that was an intentional decision.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. And I did read a bunch from the creators that they did want to do stuff like that to like make you realize how many things that we take for granted as hearing people.
Right. I've been interested, though. So anybody who went to the theater and see this, was the captions there? Like, I wonder how they had that. I assume they did.
I'm assuming they did. But
because of the theater. But like, yeah, that's just what I read in a couple of things.
Well, this movie, one of the reasons people think it won, and I don't want to detract anything from it, but it came out during like COVID, which was when we were all like, feel good.
Oh.
But it caused another controversy. It caused was it was the first movie released directly to streaming that won an Oscar. And people were very like, that's not a real movie. You know how they get. About streaming
I hope we've like let that go now, because that's such a silly take.
I think we have, but at the time people were still mad. So it probably did. If it was on streaming first, then it very well might have had to go and put on the captions.
Like so for those people who are unlike me, who don't watch TV with captions on the regular, how does it work? I guess you can go, and you can go find out, take off the captions.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll do some investigating right after this.
Get to investigating, girl.
Oh, I love investigating. Well, okay. So another big piece of this conversation, which we did mention earlier, was the use of music specifically. And the idea that deaf people can't enjoy it, or people's reactions to it, being miserable that they can't enjoy it. That line I kind of made fun of earlier. Would you be a painter if I was blind? I feel like they realized this was a thing, but they did it anyway for kind of drama, it felt like.
Right. Well, and I wonder, like, because Marley is very, very, very outspoken. She always has been. Like, she's one of the first, like, I will say the two of them are probably the most well-known deaf actors, especially now, but I've seen him on screen time more than any other deaf actors outside of Marley as well. So I wonder, like, how much input obviously Marley had like a lot of say so with the fact that she held out, which was amazing, which I'm again, like you said, I cannot believe that was even a conversation, but that they would not have been like, this line is real, real bad. This is not what I would say. Cause again, Marley, the mom's character was not likable. Like, she wasn't, I didn't hate her like a lot of the other, but like, she was not likable. It didn't quite make sense. And I don't know if it's because we wanted to sympathize with the daughter so much, which, by the way, is an ableist view. We've talked about it before, how they make the caretakers a guardian angel as if they are a savior. And that's just as bad as anything else. Mm-hmm. And this is what we see here. So I wonder, like, if they're like, because Marley's been self-sufficient, because she can also communicate. She can actually speak pretty well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's read lips, but I think she's able to read lips. Mm-hmm. And so, she's self-sufficient. Like, she doesn't necessarily need that type of, you know what I mean? Like, a daughter to translate.
That's related to another critique a lot of people had, was it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic that there would not be an interpreter in professional settings. The ADA requires that.
Yeah, I read that.
But, I mean, as we talked about, the ADA is not perfect, and it does require litigation sometimes, but, like, there should have been someone provided.
But they owned a private business.
Yes.
So that seemed to kind of like go under the radar a lot of the times.
Right.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I wanted to include this quote from someone who specializes in deaf portrayals in things. Quote, when Beacom first saw the trailer of the movie, she thought the story must be set in the past. It was the only explanation she could think of for Frank and Jackie's dependence on Ruby instead of on professional interpreters, which have been mandated ever since the Americans with Disabilities Act passed in 1990. Acknowledging that interpreting services aren't always provided and that many children interpret in a pinch, Beacom pointed out that the script made no mention of this being a last resort for the family. The movie also rarely showed deaf people communicating through other methods, like video relay services, mobile phone apps, lip reading, or just plain old pencil and paper.
Right. I'm not going to lie. That was like the rational part of me. I'm like, why wouldn't they just text like they're doing? That makes the most sense. Why wouldn't they write? Why are they not writing things to each other? Like, I don't quite understand. It's not like pen and paper don't exist.
Right. And that's, I think, like the heart of most of every critique I read was this was still told from a hearing gaze. It had people on sets who were deaf. It had actors who were. And as you said, I'm sure, 100% sure, that they did raise points and were impactful. But ultimately, it was still told from a hearing gaze.
Right.
And it was very much about Ruby and you know, the CODA experience too. Like, people who were CODA spoke up about it. Like, this is not, that wasn't my experience. Like,
I do wonder about, like, when she talks about being young and talking funny, as she says in the movie, not saying I'm saying that. Is that a typical experience from a CODA?
Well, that was one thing I read about, like, that line in particular, was that that's a thing maybe you can talk about and say if you are actually in the deaf community or a CODA who is in the deaf community. But, like, you know, like, as someone who isn't that, you shouldn't be making that comment, that joke like that, because you're not, you don't know where it's coming from. You don't know all of that stuff.
Like that's what I'm thinking. Like, it's, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're, like, insulated with only deaf people, but she seemed to be surrounded by a lot of hearing people. So yes, that would seem like, I don't think that would be as prevalent as that would seem, unless she was completely isolated in a community. Again, we don't know. They don't really talk about that backstory, because she also says you only see your deaf friends once a month.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something that came up too. And I think someone pointed out that she is, she's kind of like the virtuous, perfect like character. Like, she wants to sacrifice for her family, as you said, but also she's kind of judgy about sex with her friend and her brother, which, again, I feel like it's a strangeness between, like, I get it when your family and sex is weird, but also it felt, something about it felt very like virtue signaling.
Yeah, there was too many storylines in this, maybe, again, because we open with her singing, so you know from jump, oh, she's got a good voice, but she's singing around her deaf family, so she doesn't know, they don't know, whatever, whatnot. Right. Here we go. This is a setup to like her loving singing and then her family not approving of it. And I was like, I don't know if that's truly a thing. I don't feel like. Maybe I'm just being too open-minded in that that families are like families who grow together, sure, but I don't think they automatically would have been like, no college for you. That seems so backwards. 1980, maybe.
Right.
90s, even.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of it too was I understand storyline-wise. And I really enjoyed the movie, but we you know, like, storyline-wise, I get the drama of it, but because it has so much, like, ableist stuff around it, the fact that her singing is the thing, and they can't hear it, and so, or they must be miserable, and she can't share it with them, and they must be miserable, it's just not true. It's just, like, not a great message.
I mean, they did say at one point that the dad really likes gangster rap, which I was like, can we just say hip hop? Can you just say hip hop? Like, that's unnecessary to say gangster rap. Like, that's obviously a joke line there. But, like, because he likes the beats. And I don't know if that's not true. But I know I've definitely seen artists talk about who are hard of hearing, or composers who are hard of hearing, talking about they hear the beat and that's how they follow and create music, and it's often amazing. And that doesn't limit people to do creating music, and it's the beat lines. But I'm like, wow, okay, that's I guess that's good, but at the same time, why are we saying it that way, y'all?
Right, and that was another big scene that people were like, no, that doesn't ring true, is when he feels the vibrations of her throat, when Roby's singing and her dad feels the vibrations of her throat, which is a very emotional scene. But a lot of deaf people were like, that would be like feeling a ringtone of a phone, or like feeling it vibrate, and that it can actually be a traumatizing method used to teach deaf people on how to speak. So that was just kind of another instance where people like, this obviously was not written by someone in the deaf community.
I thought it would be a pretty touching moment. And then you're like, you should have consulted somebody.
And again, so many people said that the experience is very buried within the community. But still, like, somebody, I imagine, would have been like, hey, actually, that's kind of
Rethink this one.
Yeah.
Let's rethink this one. And again, this is different. It's not a singular experience. People have different experiences. It is a singular experience, rather, that the people have different experiences and individual experiences. But the conversation should be, maybe we should do it in a different way. I don't know. Like, I was thinking she was going to start signing the music to him to let him know the words and what it means. That was the, like, why wouldn't you go ahead and sign the song?
Yeah.
Maybe that's more difficult than to translate. I don't know, but I was like, okay, we're just touching. We're just touching.
Well, and then I had a moment of like, am I supposed to interpret this as he's so sad he can't hear her, which is, again, not the thing we should be doing? Or is it that he's like actually getting something from the vibrations?
Right. Again, is it like, oh, I want to be a part of this and this is the best way I can do it? Whatever, whatnot. Also, the flip from the mom, again, like, the next day, everybody decided to take her to Boston. I was like, wait, what? I know the brother would have been on top of it, but the mother, I was like, shouldn't we have a fight? No, she just doesn't care. Okay, here we go.
That was the moment where I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something?
it just skipped so quickly. We were all like, what's that? What just happened? Who's going where?
Yeah. Something I read from CODA's too was that it didn't properly capture the things that they are more worried about or have to deal with. And one of them was not being able to call in a pinch if you really need to, especially in the case of an emergency. And then a lot of the articles I read brought up the scene where Ruby misinterprets for her parents as a joke, like, you can't have sex ever. That's what the doctor is saying, which I also, as we said, I understand the underlying, it makes us uncomfortable as kids to think about that. But a lot of people, CODAs, were like, no, normally that's upsetting. That's like, you don't do that.
Right.
Right.
That's a big no-no for sure. Like any interpretation, we would have this whole conversation because when we would have Spanish-speaking clients at different things, and they would bring the kid, and we're like, we can't do this. This is so bad because, yes, if they misinterpret like anything or leave something out, this could be a huge problem,
right?
And a violation for both us and the parents. And so that should be a no-no to be given. Again, like settings like doctors with privacy, typically it shouldn't have ever been a child.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the issues a lot of people brought up was that it was played specifically for laughs. Like,
yes,
it was used as a joke line. And a lot of people shared like their own personal stories of doing that in a medical sense, and how upsetting it was. So
yeah,
that came up a lot. I mentioned it recently. Who knows when the schedule things have come out, but I mentioned recently that I did find a paper about hearing loss and interacting at big crowds. And I was really amazed at how many little, like, it's those little things where I was like, yes, I know what that is. I know exactly what that is, that you don't know unless mm-hmm. you've like really lived it. And I feel like that was throughout of the sort of hearing gaze of this movie, is those little intricacies.
Right.
I would say one of the general vibes I got that was going back to what we were talking about earlier was a lot of people feeling very torn because they were glad the movie got made, but wanting more, and not wanting Hollywood to shy away because they were critiques like this. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, we can't do it because the deaf community wasn't happy. Never, like, not wanting that to happen and wanting to provide more support for movies like this and deaf creators. But I know we've just been going over a lot of critiques, and they're important. Like, we have to talk about this. I did really like it, and I feel like mm-hmm. most people I read, as I said, did enjoy it, but there were problematic, damaging things in there. And we have to talk about them.
Yeah. And then in general, I think it's overall talking about taking a lesson.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is, because of stigmas and so much ableist ideals, racist ideals, all mm-hmm. the things, you're never going to have a perfect movie. And you're always going to have someone critiquing something. That's going to be an obvious. But when you hear a majority of people saying, this is the problem, we need this fixed, you need to listen. And again, as we talked about in our Feminist Around the World, when we talk about not including those marginalized people in every aspect of the thing, including screenwriting, including production, including editing, mm-hmm. then you're going to cause these big conversations, which could be avoided if you brought them in at the jump. So the fact that Marley had to, in the middle of casting, threaten someone instead of it being handled from jump is a problem. Right. And that has to be talked about in general. So when we talk about these criticisms, it's not because we're like, oh, this is an awful movie. It was an enjoyable movie. I thought each actor did an amazing job with the character they had. Really grateful to see that they are being highlighted and they're starring in it. That's amazing. Like, we want to mm-hmm. give accolades to that. Now let's bring in people of color with that. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And marginalized people and people around the world who have their own different cultural ways of interpreting things. But the fact is that because it wasn't handled from jump, that's the problem. And that's mm-hmm. what you have to talk about. And we want to praise the fact that, you know, this woman who decided she wanted to do this, was excited to celebrate this type of lifestyle. It's beautiful. And we want to celebrate that too. But to truly celebrate is to understand you're out of your depth and you're going to need to lean on the people who understand it.
Right. Right. And I think that it sounds so kind of cliche, but I'm glad we're having these conversations, because I think one of the things this movie did do was, for people who maybe have never thought about it, who have internalized ableism and didn't know, who maybe don't even know, had never heard the word ableism before. Like, I'm hoping, I know it started some conversations, and I'm hoping more and more people were reached through that and had more questions of, like, there's more to this than just a coming of age feel good story. Right. That we need to discuss.
Yeah, you got to start from somewhere. And so even if it's from being wrong to being corrected, mm-hmm. that's still a beginning.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, this movie was historic in a lot of ways. And it's one of those things where we talk about it, and I wish it wasn't so historic mm-hmm. because it's 2021 when it mm-hmm. came out. Mm-hmm. But it was. So... listeners, if you saw this when it came out, if you have any more information about how the closed caption situation, subtitle situation was, please let us know. If you have any thoughts about any of this, please let us know. You can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at @StuffMoNeverToldYou. We have a Tee Public store. We can buy some merchandise. We have a book that you can pre-order. It comes out August 29th, and you can pre-order it at stuffyoushouldreadbooks.com. You can also pre-order it on Audible. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you all.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production by iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.